It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition, a Valley Edition. And I have in the studio here Terry Snyder. Welcome, Terry.
Glad to be here, Mike.
And I have on the phone, although she sounds like she's in the studio, Zaz Hollander.
Hi, Mike and Terry.
You're back. You've been back a while from a trip, and you've been looking at some interesting stories. I thought we could begin there as a kind of a diversion from our discussion about budget issues and things that are happening there, and then we'll slowly get dragged into that. One of the biggest stories, which has a lot of what we term upside potential, is the beetle kill that's happened. And the real issue associated with the fires that might be coming. You've covered this a bit, Zaz. How about providing a summary?
Yeah. So fire season in Alaska is underway. Last weekend, the first smoke jumpers from the BLM Alaska Fire Service were deployed in Manitkotik, and then there was another. There's been a series of significant enough wildland fires, especially in the interior. There's one at near Fort Greeley, actually, right now that expanded a little bit yesterday, but I think it's supposed to snow that way later today. So so Alaska's spring may help out a little bit. But yeah, the big issue, especially here in Mat-Su, is just how big the spruce beetle outbreak is going to end up being. And that has implications for fire just in a couple different ways, that when trees are dead and the needles are still on them, they're kind of more flammable than others. And then when the trees die and the needles fall off it, that can lead to grasses growing underneath them, which can fuel more fires, and then they fall over. That makes it harder to fight the fires. So the scientists who track beetle outbreaks won't have a good number for us right now. Is it about 1 million acres affected? Mostly in Mat-Su, some of the northern Kenai, a little bit in Anchorage and other places. And so meanwhile, kind of on a parallel track, the fire forecast is for kind of above normal fire danger, especially along roads where people are in the south central interior. And so at least for the month of May. And that probably reflects in part how warm it was in March before we had that kind of resurgence of winter that gave way to whatever it is we've got now.
Right. Well, from the perspective of inside the city of Palmer, I'm looking around and I'm seeing mostly spruce that are not affected at all. We have a couple of spruce in our yard. There's one across the street, etc. So when we speak about 1 million acres being affected and having driven up toward Talkeetna and noticing that, it's one of those cases where it doesn't seem to be right in my backyard. But you are in the willow area sometimes. What's your observation of a beetle kill?
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly once you get up into the Susitna Valley, on the Little Sioux and Pittman Road areas, it's really bad. But I have to say that on Palmer Fishhook, I've got a little under 2 acres, and I don't know that any of the spruce on it are going to survive. It's been pretty sudden. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's if it's just stretched down a Little Sioux, because, you know, you can hear the Little Sioux from there. But it's definitely spread this spring to the neighborhoods in that kind of gateway to Hatcher Pass area.
Yeah, I live in downtown Palmer, and I have one across the street that's definitely
infected. Okay.
Is there any of the wood that they're falling now, Zaz, salvageable for anything? Or isn't there a timing on that, too?
A question for state parks, like they were doing some training this weekend at Nancy Lake and up at Byers Lake, and I still haven't found out whether people can use that for firewood, can come and get it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, that's the point. The beetles, within the next couple of weeks, are going to start flying. It's in the next stage of their development. And that's when you need to be really careful about, like, dropping any trees and leaving them, because that can just add to the infestation, because that's what they like to eat.
Mm. Okay.
So now is the time to kind of deal with it if you're going to deal with it. And there are, various prescriptions for dealing with beetles, but If it's a fairly widespread outbreak, it's kind of what you can do is limited to trying to save the healthy trees you've got.
Yeah. I know that there had been discussion about a delay in opening one of the campgrounds because of the desire not to increase the spread and down those trees until winter. And this is perhaps a time for a segue into campgrounds closure, not only because of beetle-killed spruce and the tendency for them to fall if they are not taken down, but also the impact of earthquake damage to some parks. Mm. I think you've been looking at some aspects of that as well, Zaz.
Well, the campgrounds at South Raleigh Lake, it's expected to be closed maybe through the summer, so basically the whole camping season. And then Byers Lake may not be closed that long, depending on how quickly they can get in there.
Okay.
Yeah, just before we leave the beetle kill, they had the sound on the Kenai at one point, right? I mean, didn't they undergo?
Oh, yeah, so there was a large infestation down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that you have also been covering some stories associated with what appear to be a spate of homicides or deaths that have occurred, particularly in Anchorage, that included a gentleman who was missing. His wife reported him missing, and his car was found by the Eagle River Center, and then his body was recently found. And then there have been other incidents which apparently were homicide-related in the city itself. Any detail on any of those?
Well, the gentleman who was reported missing at the Eagle River Nature Center, it did turn into a suicide. And normally, the media, we don't report on suicides, but because there were so many people looking for this gentleman who's from the Palmer area, that we did write about, all of us spent some time on that, and his body was found off a trail. And apparently he'd hiked there quite a bit. But his sons are Palmer High School baseball players, I believe, and the family worships at the Church on the Rock in Palmer. So definitely a loss for the community up here. And there were more than 60 people out looking for him.
Whoa.
In that Eagle River Nature Center area. But yeah, the other unfortunate incident, and we don't have much information about it yet, is yet another homicide investigation in Anchorage. There was a gentleman who was found face down near DeBar Road in Anchorage, and the police, I don't know, about a half an hour ago, it's Friday morning, have ruled that a homicide. And then they're not giving out too much more information. There is somebody who's been detained in the investigation, and there are... you know, Anchorage is on track for a fairly high number of homicides this year if the trend continues. But most, if not all, of those homicides have been isolated incidents.
Okay.
Drug-related?
People knew each other. I don't know about this one, and I don't have the statistics in front of me to answer that, Terry.
Yeah. I know I've been listening to some of the crime bills, and it's sort of mind-numbing of some of the statistics they don't have. I think they're getting better about that, or maybe they're getting... more technology, but some of the questions that go unanswered, particularly when they're making changes to those programs, not having, you know, the backup data to say this is where we are and this is where we expect to go is kind of amazing. I don't know if we're like every other state in that category or...
Well, just a reminder that early in the legislative session, there was testimony to, as the look began at criminal justice, a testimony about the change in the data collection system, utilizing a system that basically FBI-based, which would produce significantly more data. And I was surprised at that time to hear the testimony about just, one, the process. If you have an incident that occurs, if you're going to capture the data, then you have to have the responding officer or officers sit down and do all of that input. Well, the requirements to this point have been less. There was a certain amount that you put in, but it missed a lot of the nuance that would help, perhaps, to understand what was happening. So this is changing. My understanding is it's going to take a while, because when we're doing comparative statistics and you're looking back and saying, well, in the last 5 years, if you don't have the last 5 years of a baseline, it's going to be more difficult. But I think that was, for many people, a revelation that I certainly thought there was quite a bit of information available, but in reality, it was bare minimum. And that would appear to be changing.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting, too, and especially from your angle, Zaz, what is open source? What do they make available of that? And how quickly can they get that information to people? I mean, seems like there's certainly a lag in getting that to the people that need it to do their jobs.
Well, this seems to be an appropriate segue then into a little bit of discussion about what people have been doing down in Juneau, legislative activities. In summary, on Friday, what we have is something of a completion of the House work on their version of a budget, the Senate and their version of the budget, and now we appear to be headed toward reconciliation. Representatives from the two bodies will meet, and they'll spend a bit of time trying to adjust. I think it's safe to say, and Terry, you've been watching Gavel to Gavel and watching this for some time, that in regard to one element, the big element, the permanent fund dividend check, Senate has gone with a larger number, the House with a smaller number, and there's some suggestion that they'll find a place in between, but that's only the upfront story. The bigger story is a whole series of proposals, bills, that are designed to move people to a longer-term solution with putting a certain amount into the corpus of the permanent fund and or to set up a draw that will not require each year people to sit down and say, what are we going to do? Do you have any comments to make about that?
It's not over till it's over. There's, what, 2.5, maybe 3, or it's 2 weeks now because they want to be out of there by May 15th. It's going to be sort of a miracle if they get out by that time and not be called back into special session. There certainly is no shortage of opinions, and in some parts of the state are stronger than others, whether that should be a full PFD or it should be moderated back so that it lasts longer for Alaskans. And there's, I just think the reality of these cutbacks are just starting to resonate with people and how it's going to affect locally. I know that I listened for the most part. They live streamed, they Facebook lived the hearing in Juneau last night with the borough budget.
What happened?
Hearing. And I think they had a good turnout from that area. I don't know if you were there, Zaz, or if you heard any of your neighbors up there, if you were in that area. But Willow does a great job of turning
Willow
out.
Yeah, Willow has a very active budget meeting.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. And lots of support for education, as it's been the theme around. And that, you know, that services are important. Not as much of the echo chamber that we normally hear. They're certainly started that way in Wasilla, but boy, it throttled down in Palmer and I think in Willow too. Really good testimony up there, which is kind of heartening to know there is sort of, there's more of a division in what people think than I think we're given credit for sometimes. So how our legislators respond in this area to that and how, you know, how they compromise with the rest of the state is going to be an interesting kabuki dance here.
So I'm curious, stepping away from the observation of what's being said in the general sense, down to the particular. Zaz, do you have students in the school district? Two daughters in schools in the district. Is that correct?
That's right.
So I'm just curious. I'm thinking how are parents being contacted about the future? Do you receive communication from the school, et cetera, that says this is where we are relative to what your students' experience will be next year or this year or anything of that sort?
No, not directly. I think the more involved you are, the more you get that information by asking questions.
Okay.
But no, I mean, just on a very, very basic level, I have not. I have a child at elementary school and one at middle school, and haven't gotten any kind of, you know, political, I guess, for lack of a better word, emails about the budget, about turning up for meetings, or even about, you know, your child's class size may increase to X if this proposal goes through, kind of stuff. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I think some schools have been more active. I know Academy Charter was just seemed like their whole board and half their the teaching staff was there. I think the principals certainly have been showing up from the different areas and some parents, but I think you're right. I think that's always the case, Oz. It's the ones that are kind of tuned in already to the issues. That doesn't change.
I was for a period of time at the last school board meeting, which was held at the Bacatans Elementary School. And I had an opportunity to talk to a few members of the staff, the district. And I think it's safe to say that the district is working on a way to deal with the uncertainty that's associated with not knowing how many people you can hire, how many people you can continue on in contract. And the concern is there everywhere. If you talk to some teachers, they will say, at least anecdotally, they say, well, this is pretty much different. So sometimes there's been uncertainty, but this uncertainty has reached a new level of concern because of the potential impact if the decisions aren't made on the budget to offer that contract and hire someone who then, in many cases, as a teacher, is going to spend part of that summer not just vacationing and lying on a beach somewhere, but actually preparing, perhaps taking courses that will make them better able to deliver the programs in the fall that they're contracted for. So you have that aspect of it, and then you have the sense of a teacher saying, well, I have another offer, I'm a good teacher, to go elsewhere. I don't want to do that. But a bird in the hand might be the important way to go. So I think that there's a kind of a general feeling out there that this is unusually crazy.
Well, and there's a poll. You know, there's a poll from the Lower 48 right now who is crying for teachers in some areas and firefighters and police and so we're up against an economy that is sort of flailing around here, trying to figure out what services we're going to continue. And people are right to be looking elsewhere. I know even on the other end of the sector, it's seniors, you know, who are trying to have some certainty about what, you know, they can expect, what their rates are going to be at the Pioneer Home or what they can expect in senior benefits, if that program is going to continue. I mean, there's a lot of people in the low level of poverty, particularly in the Mansu Borough. So you kind of have two ends. You know, a lot of the teachers, I know the ones I've seen testify are young. They've a lot of the higher level longtime teachers are now retiring. So them coming into the profession, they don't have that surety of retirement anymore. We don't have defined benefits. So they're young and they have small kids. Oftentimes, they're the only breadwinner. So that uncertainty is really what's everybody's battling right now. And until the legislature makes some decisions this session, it's going to remain that way because let's face it, next year is an election season, and it's really hard to make those decisions then.
Well, let's go down a slightly different path, and this is the path that leads past Palmer, called the Glen Highway. I don't know, Zaz, whether you've driven into Palmer recently. We've talked to a few people. I've had a number of people say, oh, I knew it was coming, but I hadn't realized what that really means. And that we're talking about is the construction that's happening literally in the center, the place where the Palmer Wasilla Highway crosses the Glen Highway, moving into town. But secondly, interestingly enough, up the glen just a bit, a half mile maybe, there's another place there where Bogard Road is. That also flows into Arctic. These are the two major pathways that have been used to get into and out of town. Both of them are undergoing some construction. And then as you go on down the highway going south toward Anchorage, you have some similar activities happening, all obscured, even though the DOT is working very, very carefully to provide water that keeps the dust down. Dust is flying as it gets dry. And also, I'm seeing the probability that to get out of town, you may want to go down the Springer Loop as far as you can before you come into the Glen. And if you want to go in the other direction, you may want to go on up to Palmer Fishhook, actually, to make that happen and to avoid this whole centerpiece, which is just going to be with us for a while. I know, Zaz, you're out in the Palmer Fishhook area. Have you encountered any of this as you've traveled about?
I have not yet encountered it, Mike, but I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. This is fair warning to all listeners. This is the time when planning slight alterations in your schedule. If you've thought, for example, in the past when you've gone to the Alaska State Fair, there were certain times you would probably not want to be in that traffic jam. The same thing may be true on a mini basis here. You want to think about, do I have to go there? Do I have to go this route because I've been doing it? Or let me look at my Waze app or whatever you're using, look at the map. And I think what's going to happen is the creative travel is going to be very important for someone who wants to have a relaxed trip in and out of Palmer in the next few months.
Fair to say.
Okay. Well, Zaz, are there any other topics we have missed that you have been covering that you would want to touch upon this week?
No, I am going to be looking at the port budget as far as the budget process. So maybe more on that next week.
Oh, and our port budget process is kind of interesting, but pales in comparison to what's happening in Anchorage when we're adding zeros to the dollar amounts that are considered there.
Yeah, they changed all the budget hearings last night, I noticed. They're kicking it farther down the road for meeting on that. They're going to have a new budget hearing.
You're talking about Anchorage?
No, about here.
About out here.
In Matsu.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A little bit of time.
Valley Edition.
Okay. You got it. All right. Well, folks, it's that time. I want to thank Terry Snyder for coming in here and sharing observations about what's happened this week. Thank you, Terry.
It's good to be able to walk around and get here.
And Zaz, I want to thank you for appearing to be here in person when you're really on the phone.
Maybe next time. Thanks, Mike.
We look forward to it. Hope you have a good day. Have a good weekend. Drive carefully out there. As we pointed out, there are changed patterns to traffic.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.